a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome into the Jazz Hoops Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. Find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. Read me at KSLSports.com as always. And you can follow KSL on Twitter at KSL Sports. Same thing goes for Instagram. Same thing goes for Facebook. All right, big episode today. Thanks for everyone. I was gone last week, so thanks for coming back. I know it's been a 2 week hiatus, so it means a lot to have you coming back. We're going to talk about the new coach the Jazz hired. Very interesting. I think there's a lot going into this hire. We'll talk about that coming up in just a moment. A couple of names in the draft that I watched, two kids from Michigan State. Maybe the mock drafts, who they have the Jazz drafting right now, my thoughts on those guys. And then I'll try and answer your questions as well in the mailbag. Again, at Ben's Hoops. Appreciate you always tweeting at me, following me. And if you can't get a question in for this podcast, obviously, as I'm recording it, we'll try and get you in the next one. Another story I want to talk about, and I'll do that before the end of the show, is the new workout rules, which are really interesting. I think it's going to tip most teams' hands a little bit on who they're looking at. We might have less mystery going into the actual draft itself on draft night coming up on November 18th, which I'm recording this on Friday, October 16th, so 2 days before a month out of the actual draft. So we're close. It's going to be fun. I've had fun watching all the players. So let's start with the big news today. It actually came out last night. The first person to report it was Keith Pompey, who covers the Philadelphia 76ers for the Philadelphia Inquirer. I was able to confirm it, though the Jazz haven't announced it yet, that the Jazz are adding a new name to Quinn Snyder's bench. This will be the third name being added to Snyder's bench, and this one is Sergei Oliva. He comes from Philadelphia. He actually wasn't a coach. He was an executive, which is the same route that Dell Demps took coming over from New Orleans. He was general manager. Oliva is coming over. He was the vice president of strategy for the 76ers. He had served as a basketball operations analyst before that. He was also the senior director of analytics and strategy. So he's a hardcore numbers guy. Hardcore numbers guy. You look at his history and his education. I went and looked at his LinkedIn page. He went to the Polytechnic University of Catalonia. He's got a PhD in complexity theory. And just to give you a quick update on what that is and how it affects basketball, and I had to go on YouTube last night because I don't have a PhD. I certainly don't have it in complexity theory. Complexity theory is basically organizing chaos or finding ways to look at how two things, three things, four things, hey, five things, like there are numbers of players on a basketball team or on the floor at one time, how they interact with each other and how when they interact, they can either improve together or be worse together. That seems like it's pretty applicable. That seems to make a lot of sense. So that's kind of what complexity theory is. I know I'm oversimplifying it, but that's what I was able to gather from my reading last night. So that's what he's going to do. And according to a couple of articles I read last night, one of the things that Oliva did when he was in Philly was his numbers, that Brett Brown, who's the coach in Philly, they really relied heavily on his numbers to dictate rotations, who can be on the floor together, who can't be on the floor together. It's, you know, it's kind of funny for October. It's kind of the spooky mad scientist vision of how to play basketball, how to coach basketball.
I kind of thought, honestly, the Jazz were past this point a little bit. Not that you're ever beyond improvement or beyond figuring out what the numbers say. You have to have it. I think it's good that the Jazz are doing it. I think you have to continue to do it. That's how you build your best team. But when you have Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, Joe Ingles, Royce O'Neal, Rudy Gobert, Bojan Bogdanovic, Jordan Clarkson, you would think at most points you should have a pretty good combination of players on the floor, and you wouldn't necessarily need somebody like this whose mind works with the understanding of, I know how to plug these numbers in, I know how to read the system, I know how to read the output, and not only can I put it in the system, I can see how it's working live, in action, get it to translate onto the floor. But I'm guessing that's why Quinn Snyder and Dennis Lindsay and Justin Zanuck want to have Oliva on this bench for Quinn Snyder. So I think it's an interesting move. I think it's interesting that there's now two executives on Quinn Snyder's coaching bench now after losing Johnny Bryant to the New York Knicks, who wasn't that way at all. I mean, I don't want to say he didn't know analytics. Of course he did. But he was really kind of a former player developmental coach. And Snyder doesn't have a ton of former players on his bench. Alex Jensen obviously qualifies. Keon Dooling, who the Jazz just hired last month, qualifies as well. So it's an interesting move. I like the move. It'll be interesting to meet this guy. He's pretty young. It seems very much like a Quinn Snyder hire, coming over with European influences. Has a history in Philadelphia. Quinn did a little bit, but I'm sure there wasn't any crossover at that point. So, but high praise all around. You know, the Philadelphia 76ers felt like they got too much away from basketball, too far into the analytics, and they let a couple of guys go. One of the guys joined the Sacramento Kings, and now Oliva has joined the Jazz. So that's an interesting story. I think that's going to be fun to watch. I'll be curious to see what the Jazz say when they release their official press release on what Quinn Snyder says about him, or if maybe it's Dennis Lindsay who talks about him. That could be telling on who made this hire or how they want to use him. So keep an eye on that, and we'll, of course, have that story. I've already got one up at kslsports.com. All right, a couple other stories that I want to run through. Yesterday, I had a cool opportunity. Got to go down to the Salt Lake City Police Department where Joe Ingles was talking. We know that Joe Ingles has a son who has autism. Of course, the police department had that tragic shooting with a 13-year-old autistic boy, or I believe he has Asperger's. That was just horrible. And the boy survived, and he was in the hospital, and thankfully he survived. But it really hit close to home for Joe Ingles as he thought about how his son could find himself in those type of situation where they call for help because they need help. And, you know, the police officers aren't well equipped to handle somebody with those extrasensory needs. And Joe talked about what that is, what those needs are like, how you have to treat, you know, his son different from his daughter and their twins. So it's kind of a nice comparison. And how Joe's working with a group called Culture City. It's a nonprofit organization that helps companies, people with trainings on how to make sure you're welcoming to people with sensory needs. And so Joe Ingles has set them up with the Salt Lake City Police Department. The police department's working with Culture City to make sure they get trained. So it was Chief Mike Brown. It was Joe Ingles. It was the mayor, Aaron Mendenhall, who I'd never met before. So that was kind of cool. I got a chance to ask her a question. She was there. So you can read that story at kslsports.com. It's pretty straightforward. They're going to be going undergoing this training over the next few months, it sounds like. It includes 911 dispatchers. It includes all first responders. So I believe that's EMTs and firefighters. I know for sure it's Salt Lake Police Department, Fire Department, and the 911 dispatch. So really cool. And that's how players can step in and really, you know, affect and improve their community. And, you know, Joe's from Australia. Joe has said a lot of times he doesn't plan on living in Utah for the rest of his life. He'll probably own property here. But when he retires, he said if his kids are in a good spot to go back and start school in Australia, that's their plan, to be closer to their families. So Joe's making a lasting change in Salt Lake City and our community, and he's not going to be here for a long time. So I think that's a nice thing. A lot of Jazz players recently have taken a lot of flack for speaking out in the community, speaking out against what they think are wrongs when they're trying to help. I believe they're trying to help, and Joe Ingles is kind of putting his money and his time where his mouth is. So it's fun to talk to Joe, the mayor, and Chief Mike Brown last night getting ready for that announcement. So that was cool. You can read that article at kslsports.com. Quick outline now of what this summer's going to look like for the Jazz. We're getting a little bit, I should say, off-season, not summer. Three kind of events that I think are going to shape what the off-season looks like, and these are pretty straightforward. I wrote about this at kslsports.com. First of all, the extension talks that are going to come up, and I think those are going to probably be the most important on the long-term future of the Jazz. And of course, those extension talks are going to start with Donovan Mitchell. Jazz are going to want to give him the max contract, probably 5 years, as much as they can. And he qualifies for that max deal. I mean, you can give anyone a max deal, but he doesn't qualify for the kind of super max that some rookies can get if they win an MVP or make all NBA. But he can get that that rookie max, and he'll get that. I think the Jazz will offer to him. The question comes on whether or not that he takes the 3 year or if he takes the 5 year. That's what I'm going to be watching, Jazz fans. Deron Williams took the 3 year, and the Jazz took that as a signal that he was going to leave after 3 years, so they traded him after two. Donovan Mitchell could be in that same spot. Does he take a 3 year deal and become an unrestricted free agent sooner? If that's the case, Jazz are probably looking at trading him in a couple of seasons. I'm sure they would prefer to have him stick around. They would like to woo him and keep him here and win a championship. But if he doesn't believe that that can happen here, or if he questions whether or not that can happen here, he might sign that 3 year deal. Keep an eye on that. That's going to come up probably after the draft. The draft is another one of these decisions that's going to impact the Jazz offseason before we get to the draft. Rudy Gobert also up for a contract extension. I was really kind of a non-believer that the Jazz would offer it to him because he's got to play another year before he hits unrestricted free agency. I've probably changed my tune on that a little bit. It does sound like Rudy's not going to demand the Supermax, which is that five-year, $250 million deal. It sounds like he might be willing to take less money than that. I think if you can sign him at $40 million a season, I know it sounds like a lot. It is. But if you can sign him at 5 years, $200 million, I think you probably do it. I think that probably makes sense for Rudy because that contract stays pretty tradable compared to those deals that get up to $54, $55 million on the last couple of years. So the Jazz could certainly do that, and they could rework Rudy Gobert's contract. Quickly, before we move on to the other events, I saw this in The Athletic from John Hollinger. You know him. He was at ESPN. He used to be in the front office with the Memphis Grizzlies. He had a really interesting idea for the Jazz, and the Jazz are smart. They look under every rock. They kick every tire. They check everything they can. He mentioned potentially Mike Conley opting out of his final year of his deal at, I think it's $34 million this season. It's a player option or an early termination option, same thing. And reworking his contract and signing an extension with the Jazz where he takes less money this season as opposed to the $34 million, but maybe signs a $40 or $50 million deal over the next, say, 4 years. And that way, what he does is he gets his money back. Probably going to be, you know, 50 or 60. It's going to need to be a high number because he's due 35 next year. So he gets essentially that money paid out over a longer period of time with guaranteed money on the back end. That way the Jazz actually loosen up a little bit of ability to have some cap space this offseason in addition to the mid-level exception, in addition to the biannual exception, which will make it significantly easier to sign Jordan Clarkson if that's the case. The advantage for the Jazz is they have this extra money. They lower their cap hit next year. The advantage for Mike Conley is, let's say he plays this season and is terrible. And earns $35 million, and then people say, well, we think he's worth $8 million. Well, maybe he signs a three-year, $25 million deal at that point, and he loses money. Where if this season the Jazz say, well, we'll give you an average of $15 million for the next four seasons and get you up to $60 million, that's close to the same money, but he's getting more per year. The Jazz could work on something like that that could potentially get him some more cash. I don't know if it happens, but an interesting idea from John Hollinger. All right, let's get into the second key decision the Jazz are going to have to make this year. That comes to free agency. That's where Jordan Clarkson starts to fit in. Most teams have the mid-level exception this offseason across the league that they'll be able to offer him. Handful of teams, Detroit, Miami, the Knicks, a couple of teams. I think Atlanta can throw a bunch of money at him if they want because they've got cap space. Phoenix is in that group. If they want to sign him, they could throw more money than the Jazz can. Not more than the Jazz can afford. Jazz have his bird rights, so they can go above the salary cap and sign him. It could affect whether they have the mid-level exception or the taxpayer mid-level exception, and that money changes a little bit. But I think the Jazz would like to bring Jordan Clarkson back. I have a hard time seeing somebody offer him so much money that the Jazz wouldn't be willing to offer him that same number. But he's an unrestricted free agent, so he can go anywhere he wants. My fear if I'm a Jazz fan is that he goes and signs with the Lakers again, where he was drafted out of college, started his career, got traded to a LeBron team, so he knows LeBron already. Maybe that's good, maybe that's bad, maybe LeBron doesn't like him. I think LeBron likes most people. But he wants to play in a high-level city that he's familiar with, where he kind of embraced the Hollywood spotlight, dated celebrities, can get the same mid-level exception that other teams are offering him. I think the Lakers should have it. They might be near the taxpayer, but he could probably get close to that $10 million. And then be competing for a championship on a team that needs him. And Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is opting out of his contract with the Lakers. He showed the value he had there. He's probably going to go sign somewhere else now and get more money now that he has a ring. Jordan Clarkson could go get his ring in L.A. or compete for one next year, sign a one-year deal or a two-year deal, and then hit the free agent market again. So that would be my fear if I'm a Jazz fan, if I want to see Jordan Clarkson come back. That's the team I would focus on, but certainly he could sign anywhere he wants. Free agency is going to be interesting for the Jazz, and of course the biannual exception. I wrote an article earlier in the year. It's pinned at the top of my Twitter page, at Ben's Hoops. 32 free agency players in free agency the Jazz can look at. I wrote another article. It's included in this article at KSLSports.com I published this week. That's the top 10 most realistic targets for the Jazz. So you can go find that as well, KSLSports.com. And then the third set of decisions the Jazz are going to have to make, and I think it's in fact, it is the first. We know that, and it's going to set up free agency. It's going to set up extension talks, is draft night. Coming up on November 18th, as I mentioned, a month from Sunday. It's going to be interesting to see what the Jazz do on draft night. They've only got one pick. I would be stunned if they don't make a first-round pick. That doesn't mean they necessarily stick at 23. They could move up. They could move back. But I think they're going to want to get a first-round pick on the roster and hope he develops, hope he turns into a future star or a steal. And the Jazz have had a couple of those guys. Rudy Gobert was the 27th pick. Donovan Mitchell was, what, 13 or 14? They've had guys come in and pan out, even, you know, late lottery, end of the first round. If you could get another guy who's a rotation piece either next season or in the next few seasons, and you get him at the end of the first round and he's cost-controlled for the next five-plus years, you're thrilled. And the Jazz have traded away Torian Prince when they drafted George Hill, or when they traded for George Hill. They lost players when they traded for Ricky Rubio. They lost draft picks. You know, they don't have a ton of young talent on this roster. They lost Grayson Allen when they traded for Mike Conley. They don't have their pick next year in 2021 from the Mike Conley trade. So they need to have a young player locked in on a long salary that hits. So this is an important draft for the Jazz. And then keep an eye on whether they try and buy a second-round pick, whether they feel like they can trade a second-round pick, whether they feel like they can clear the salary of Ed Davis in a trade for a second-round pick or for the right to swap second-round picks and lose that $5 million. That could make it easier to sign Jordan Clarkson as well. So a lot of the rest of the offseason is going to be set up by what happens on draft night. So keep an eye on that coming up again on November 18th. All right, I wrote a couple of articles about players I watched this week. I was only able to watch two prospects for the Jazz this week that I like that are projected to be drafted between 20 and 40, kind of depending on the mock draft you look at, and that may feel like a big number. The truth is you're going to have players that are projected to go 40 that go 20 in this draft. It kind of gets really talent-heavy at the end of the first round. So that's a good spot for the Jazz to be in. I think there's good players. The first guy I looked at is Xavier Tillman from Michigan State. I looked at two Michigan State players. Xavier Tillman is going to be drafted by the guy who thinks he's the smartest person in the room. And I say that a little bit as an insult, honestly, because I think the guy who takes him or the team that drafts him is going to say, oh, we love that he sets great screens, passes the ball really well, does all the fundamentals. He's actually a really good defensive player. That's a plus. There's absolutely no reason to doubt that. But he just kind of, you're going to have to convince yourself a little bit that he does all those little things and that your team has so much talent that the other things he does is kind of the hustle player, the cleanup man, is going to help you win so many games. And maybe he does. Maybe he has that opportunity. And the problem is a lot of people, I think, are going to say, oh, well, he went to Michigan State and he's kind of a six undersized center who does it all. That's Draymond Green. He's just absolutely not Draymond Green at all. He doesn't look like Draymond Green. He doesn't play like Draymond Green. He does a couple of the same little things. You can tell he communicates really well defensively. He always knows where to be. He has a couple of things he can do offensively, but he's not that skilled. He's just not that fluid of an athlete. He doesn't move like that at all. He's a good player. I get why people like him at the end of the first round or early second round. I like him way more as a second round pick than I do a first rounder, but maybe if I was Boston, I'm trying to think of these teams that are like kind of super talented already that don't need big guys to get touches, but just kind of fill in those other spots. That's where I would put him on a team like that, that is close to competing or is competing and just needs a little bit of help. He could fit probably pretty well next to Nikola Jokic in Denver. That might be an interesting spot if they lose some of their bigs and they're going to this offseason. You know, Paul Millsap's going to leave. Grant's might leave. I think he's going to be their top priority. That's where he kind of could fit. He can play the four. He can play the backup five. But I don't love him. I could see the Jazz potentially pulling the trigger on him. He kind of has some Jazz stuff. He's got long arms. He's from a blue chip school. He's mature. He could come in and play right away. Those are kind of Jazz things that they've drafted at the end of the first round before. But I don't love him. And let me tell you what, my biggest problem with him, so much of what he does offensively is set up by the other guy I want to talk about, who I absolutely love in this draft. And that's Cassius Winston, the point guard, the four-year senior at Michigan State. He's awesome. He's so fun to watch. He's an absolutely pure point guard, true point guard, plays the game the way old-school point guards always have. Absolutely incredible passer, head always up on a swivel, sees the entire court. I hate to be cliche, but, you know, understands what's going to happen two moves away. He's just, and something that comes from being at college, in college for so long, played for 4 years, as I mentioned, playing against a lot of guys who only played 1 or 2 years. But I love his style of play on top of how smart he is. He's got a big body that reminds me a lot of Kyle Lowry. He's not that tall. He's only 6'1". But it's like kind of like older Chris Paul. He just bullies people because he's so low to the ground and strong, but not, you know, 5'8", 5'9", some of these guys that we've seen try to make it and just can't. He really has a strong body, so he gets in the paint and he lowers his shoulder and he pushes guys out of the way. Has a really good floater, one of the best floaters in college basketball. He hits 43% of his three-point shots and has throughout his four-year career at Michigan State. So there's absolutely zero question that he's an elite shooter. Kills you if you go under on the pick and roll. He'll spot up and hit the three. If you go over, he attacks the paint. He's great finding who I was just talking about, Xavier Tillman, all alone for easy baskets. He can get the pass off at any angle on the pick and roll. If that's defended well or he's defended well, he kicks out to shooters on the perimeter. He does absolutely everything well offensively that you want to see. And he could step in day one and play on the NBA on all 30 teams. He would look incredibly good next to Rudy Gobert. I personally think, despite the fact that he's 22 years old, because he's so talented, he's got the upside to potentially be a starter in the NBA, which would be nice insurance for a guy like Mike Conley. I think the Jazz could probably get more use out of him than they did a player like Emmanuel Mudiay this season. I think he could come in and be ready to play right away. So he might be my favorite player in this draft right now, especially where the Jazz are drafting. He's absolutely incredible to watch. He plays the game the right way. He makes everyone around him look good. He's a winner. He's got really strong leadership qualities off the floor. He lost a brother due to suicide over the last couple of seasons and has handled that unbelievably, unimaginably well. And just kind of has this kind of stoic nature. He's awesome. So if I were you, if I were a Jazz fan, I'd go watch Cassius Winston. I'm really impressed with him. There's a lot of point guards at the end of the first round. I've watched a few of them so far. He's by far my favorite of that group, and he might be my favorite player in the draft right now. So keep an eye on him. I think he's fun to watch. I think he's a pretty cool NBA player. We'll see if the Jazz go and see him work out. This was another piece of news that dropped earlier this week. I wrote this, I want to say, on Monday. The NBA is going to allow in-person draft workouts. This was first reported by Jonathan Givony, who used to run Draft Express and now works at ESPN, is kind of their top draft guy with Mike Schmitz. This is interesting. Every NBA team is only going to get 10 in-person workouts, and they're going to have to fly to the city of where that player is. The players are not flying to the teams. So you're going to have multiple teams at one workout. It's going to be kind of interesting. But you only get 10. You know, the Jazz in the past have worked out 100 players at a time, and you'll have, you know, 6 guys in a group so they can play 3-on-3, 2-on-2, 1-on-1, and get these guys working together. You're basically only getting individual workouts with 10 guys, from my understanding, for the most part. So instead of having 20 sessions like the Jazz have had, you're going to have 10 sessions with only one guy. So we're going to narrow this down tenfold from what we have in the past for the Jazz of guessing, man, all these guys, they've worked out, they've seen everybody, seeing guys we've never even, you know, heard of that they could be looking at in the second round. Jazz aren't set to have a second round pick right now, so the 10 guys they're going to use their workouts on are guys they're seriously going to consider drafting in the first round. So I don't think they're going to report who they're seeing. I think that's going to be the little bit of secrecy they try to have. I think it's going to be really difficult to keep those names from coming out because agents are going to want to let you know who was at the draft. So if you want to draft their guy higher, you know, hey, we got to get in front of the Jazz if the Jazz went to Cassius Winston's workout or Cassius Stanley's workout or Xavier Tillman's workout or Nico Mannion's workout or Josh Green's workout. we're going to hear who these teams have seen so other teams can try and get out in front of it. So that's a very huge story. That might be the biggest story we've had this week, and it really went under the radar, obviously, because the Lakers had just won a championship, and you know, that was kind of the story of the week. It'll be interesting to see what these teams do. I'll be very curious to see how the Jazz try and manage and hide who they're actually getting a chance to work out, because you're not going to get more secret workouts. You're going to get 10. If you work a guy out twice, that counts towards your 10. It's going to be really hard to do. So keep an eye on that. You can read up all the information I wrote at kslsports.com. All right, let's get to the point in this podcast where I try and answer your questions. I appreciate everyone who always asks. Looks like we have a good number of questions. We'll start with Adam King. Latest of Favors. So what's the latest on Derek Favors? I haven't heard any change in news. I still think the Jazz are going to look at it. I think it makes sense. I think there's mutual interest. I think there's a fit. I think he comes in and he can play right away, and you know he can play in the playoffs. Those are really important. The Jazz didn't have a big man behind Rudy Gobert, especially with Bojan Bogdanović out, that could play in the playoffs. So I think that would be very helpful. Also, Adam asked, are the Jazz, after that 7-footer from Europe in the draft, there are a couple of guys that could fit that description, maybe Alexei Pokusevski, 7'3", 18, or he's got a 7'3 wingspan, 7 feet tall. He's kind of weird. I want to say he comes from the lower levels. I haven't watched him yet. He plays in the lower levels at Olympiacos, though, in Serbia. He moves like a guard by all reports, but he's kind of played at this lower level. So when we talk about these guys and how they're going to come up and fit, it's hard to know. Are you Giannis Antetokounmpo, who played in that really low-level Greek league that came over and dominated? Or are you Dragan Bender, who kind of dominated some weird teams and then never could stick in the NBA? I think that's the question. But yeah, the Jazz are absolutely going to do, they're going to figure out everything they can in the draft, and there's no one who's going to go unnoticed for the Jazz. Greg Pop, any rumors the Jazz trading Conley for either Otto Porter or Tobias Harris? Not that I've heard. Nothing like that. I don't think it's crazy to think the Jazz could kind of quietly make some phone calls, or certainly listen to phone calls on Mike Conley. He's good. He's got a $34 million expiring contract. You could potentially sign him again after this offseason. Jazz could find a player that they like better that's a big wing if they feel like Donovan Mitchell's a point guard. I don't think it's crazy that the Jazz could move on from Mike Conley this offseason. It would be drastic. It would be a radical change and pretty dramatic, but it's possible. It's certainly possible the Jazz could do it. I wouldn't bet on it, though. I think they want to see what they have with him. Derek Peterson, any truth to the Jrue Holiday possible trade rumors, and should the Jazz do anything about it? If you could trade Mike Conley for Jrue Holiday, I would do that. I mean, Jrue Holiday's a better player. I don't know how else you get him, but I've also heard Denver's interested in Jrue Holiday. It clearly seems like New Orleans wants to totally start over. They're going to lose J.J. Redick this offseason. They're going to go all in on Zion, Brandon Ingram, maybe Lonzo Ball. I don't know. Do they think Lonzo's a real guy? I don't know. Nickeil Alexander-Walker's there. Hayes, who they drafted last year. They're cool. They're a cool team. They probably don't need Jrue Holiday artificially keeping them afloat and winning games that Zion has to learn how to win. So if he became available, the Jazz, I'm sure, would love him and would probably look at trading Mike Conley for him. But I haven't heard that. Rob Stewart, my old intern. What's an underrated name on the free agent market that the Jazz might sign? Think Moutier from last year. The name I've really talked about a lot is Mo Harkless. I don't know how cheap he is. He might cost a full $10 million. That's kind of the name I've liked for the Jazz. He's hit shots at some points in his career. Some places he hasn't, but when he has a standstill shooter, it seems like he can shoot pretty well, and the Jazz can have those types of can set up those types of shots. Maybe that's what Quinn Snyder does the best at as a coach, is getting guys open looks. So if you could get Mo Harkless's defense and get him to shoot a reasonable percentage, I think that'd be really interesting. Andrew on Twitter, if the Jazz were able to get out from Ed Davis's contract, how do we think they would use the space? I think most of that would go to re-signing Jordan Clarkson, unless they reworked, as I mentioned earlier on this podcast, potentially reworked Mike Conley's deal to stretch it out longer by having him opt out this season and signing for a long-term deal. They could potentially have a little bit more money, but that's probably unlikely. I really think that $5 million would just go to give them a little bit more breathing room to re-sign Jordan Clarkson. Otherwise, I think that's all my questions I got. I appreciate everyone who tuned into this Jazz Notes podcast. As always, find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. If you are listening and want to send me a question, my DMs are always open. I usually respond just to the DM, but if I remember, I'll answer it in the next podcast, or you can always tweet at me. Read us at kslsports.com. We'll be back next week with another episode of Jazz Notes.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on kslpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.